So we've been discussing the Sermon on the Mount, and we've been able to get through Lesson 5, and we've talked about, I'll let you guys tell me, what are the main topics that we've talked about thus far? The first one was be happy. What was the next section that we talked about? Be influential. We talked about lesson 3 was about being righteous. And then last week we finished up talking about being sincere. We ended up we talked about fasting. Talked about how when we fast we should make sure and wash ourselves and make sure we're not fasting for the wrong reason. And I don't think it's any coincidence as you move from the topic of fasting into verse 19 of chapter 6. I don't think there's any coincidence there how those topics, two topics blend together. If you look at the sermon as a whole, it's interesting how you can see how everything just kind of dovetails so nicely into each other. So let's look at Matthew 19, and before we get into to reading this portion about our what our lesson says here, I want to just reaffirm in our minds what we ended off with last week. Verse 16 of chapter 6 says, Moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites, with a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces, that they may appear to be fasting, to men to be fasting. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But you, when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, so that you do not appear to men to be fasting, but to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. So if you look at your lesson, lesson 5 is about being loyal. And it says here, the definition of loyal is giving or showing firm and constant support or allegiance. Thus far in our class, we've looked at four attitudes connected with the kingdom of heaven. Be happy, be influential, be righteous, be sincere. These represent our identity as faithful servants of the King. Christ isn't looking for someone who will occasionally be sincere or sometimes be righteous or is usually found happy, but loyal stewards who have so ordered priorities as to become happy, influential, righteous, sincere Christians. And the key to loyalty is the proper ordering of our priorities. By pre-ordering certain values in our lives, we can set a course that will ensure firm and constant support and allegiance to God. This section offers two tests of loyalty to God. By measuring these two elements in our lives, we can determine if our loyalty is strong and abiding. So the first test we're going to look at this evening is the test of treasure. So let's read the text. Chapter 6, verse 19. We'll read through verse 34. Beginning of verse 19. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The lamp is the body of the eye. If therefore your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. I'm going to go ahead and stop right there, just for sake of time, but let's think again about the verse in fasting. What's fasting about? What does it say at the end of in verse 18? What does it say there? So that you do not appear to men to be fasting, but to your Father who is in the secret place. And your Father who sees you in secret will reward you. You know, it's interesting as we talk about the Sermon on the Mount, and we keep focusing and going back to the heart. How the heart functions in our lives as Christians. I keep going back to the Pharisees and thinking about how everything they did was so physical, and it wasn't really about the heart. It was about being seen by men. Everything related back to being seen by men. The things that they did, the actions that they did, it was all about getting that recognition. We can't focus enough on the heart. You look back at the Old Testament, the things that they did, and the reasons why they did a lot of those things. We were discussing last week after our class, my wife and I were, about fasting, because it's interesting, the will that we have inside of our bodies, this desire that we have, whether it be to eat or just that drive that we have to want something and to do something, we get in this routine, and the desire of our heart just shows through everything that we do. And so the will that we have to eat, eating for a lot of us is just something that we do. You think about back then, eating was something that was a major part of their lives. They didn't have television. They didn't have internet. That was their gathering time. That was the time that they spent together. And now you're going to abstain from eating. You're going to abstain from doing those things. Why? Was it a physical reason? Why do people fast nowadays? Some people do it for health reasons. It's a cleansing process, right? Some people do it. I don't know why some people do it. Why would you want to? But some people do it just because, you know, I'm trying to lose some weight. And I'm just going to stop eating. Some people do it because, you know, mentally they have some problems and they feel like, you know, if I don't eat, it'll make me feel better and I'll look better. And but ultimately, it comes down to the fact that it's a change of heart. It's an opportunity for you to not focus on the physical and focus on something else. And so, as I mentioned, I don't think that there's a coincidence here that these two go together, right? Because now let's talk about treasure. Let's define treasure. And you look in verses 19 through 21, and our question one says, to define the word treasure. Now keep in mind what we've just been talking about. The physical side, this physical body, the flesh, versus the spiritual side of us. So somebody give me what you wrote down about a definition or define how you define the word treasure.
Things we value the most in life.
Okay, very good. My question to you would be, what's your standard of value? There's no right answer to that, because everybody's is going to be different, isn't it? Everybody's is going to be different. Your standard of value is going to be way different than mine, because I value certain things more than you do. But I think that's an excellent point. It's all based upon what you value the most. Anybody else? Go ahead. The things that occupy your thoughts and time. Okay? We'll talk about that in a minute, because as it says in that verse, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Josh? Anybody else?
Your
What's your definition of treasure? Worth guarding at all costs. So if I'm a pirate and I have accumulated all this treasure, I'm going to guard it with all everything I have. To me, that's treasure. That's valuable. That's a good point. He makes a good point. It's something that we guard at all costs. We'll talk about that here in just a minute as well. Question number two, why is our choice of treasure such a significant test of our loyalty? It's y'all's turn to answer that.
Because what you treasure is what you put all your interest and energy into accumulating and protecting.
My definition of what treasure is the treasure is your heart's desire. It is what consumes your thoughts, your time, your effort, your priority. It is the ever-constant goal you're striving for. And just like you said, it is what you're always going after, isn't it? It's what we put our time and effort into. And so I think it's proper to say it's a test of our loyalty, because I think Ben said this on Sunday, that our priorities tell on us, don't they? If you say that you love the Lord and you are wanting to strive to put Him first, but you're not here, kind of a good testimony of where your heart really is, isn't it? It's a pretty good indicator that your loyalty is really not where it should be. What are some examples of earthly treasures? What are some examples of earthly treasures? Car. Okay. Friendship. I like that. It's good. What else? Earthly treasures. Your job. For a lot of people, it is. For a lot of people, their job is their earthly treasure so they can get their car. Just things, right? These physical trinkets that are here. And what does it say about those things? What does verse 19 say about those treasures on earth? Moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. So I think in a lot of ways, as I was thinking about how it tests our loyalty, I think sometimes we tried to hide our loyalty. We try to buy things that don't rust. They started making cars out of aluminum. They won't rust and fall apart as quickly. That's something that I want to have long term. That's not a huge priority for me. So once I get that, I'm good. So but these earthly treasures, they tend to consume us, don't they? The old adage that better is the enemy of good. You can always have something better. Always have something better. And ultimately, what it comes down to is our heart's desire. What are some examples of heavenly treasures?
The Apostle Paul said in Acts 20 and 33, I have coveted no one's silver or gold or clothes. And we know that his heavenly treasure was to please God.
So a heavenly treasure would be to please God and to obey Him. Okay. Anybody else? What's another heavenly treasure? Because apparently we're supposed to be storing these up. So if we don't know what they are, we're going to have a tough time.
The big one for me is that I'm going to be with my family members again. days, and I'm going to be with my Savior full time one of these days.
From my perspective, and y'all know that I think a little bit differently sometimes. But if I'm supposed to be laying up for myself treasures in heaven, I think that's the way my mind goes. I am laying up for myself salvation, hope in Christ, that one day my faith will be lost in heavenly sight. That one day I will have this understanding of who God is and this understanding of fuller understanding of what Christ did for me, a fuller understanding of my purpose, but also a fuller understanding of eternity and how I can be in eternity with God. Absolutely agree. Why is our choice of treasure such a significant test of our loyalty? If be right with you. If we are constantly putting our trust and putting our loyalty in things that rust and that break down, is that true loyalty? The only true loyalty that we can have is to something that is constant. Something that is absolute, immovable, that we can have the assurity that it's not changing. And only in that, in my opinion, we can be loyal to, because it's not going anywhere. It's not changing. No, Plenty?
I believe if we're going to lay up treasure in heaven, we're going to have to go back to the Beatitudes. Do the things that are listed there.
And I think it goes back to the choices that we make, they show the true desires of our hearts, don't they? Just like you said in the Beatitudes, you go back and look, are we poor in spirit? Do we mourn? Are we meek? Do we hunger and thirst for righteousness? Are we merciful? Are we pure in heart? Are we peacemakers? I think you're exactly right. Are those the things, are those spiritual things, the things that matter the most to us? Are those the desires of our heart?
We're given the time that we have on this earth to prepare ourselves to go to heaven according to God's will. And if we don't do that, we won't make it.
We have... See, I was going to expound on that, but I'm not going to because I'm going to talk about that here in a little bit. It is. It's hard to get around the fact that we've only got so much time. We better take care of that time that we've got. We better do the most with it that we can. If we choose physical pursuits, question 3, what is the outcome? And it's referencing here Ecclesiastes 5, verse 10 through 16. Try to get somebody to read that for me. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 10 through 16. Right? Ecclesiastes 5, starting verse 10. Get somebody to read that for me, Josh.
He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with his income. This too is vanity. When good things increase, those who consume them increase. So what is the advantage to their owners except to look on? The sleep of the working man is pleasant, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. There is a grievous evil which I have seen under the sun, riches being hoarded by their owner to his hurt. When those riches were lost through a bad investment, he had fathered a son, and there was nothing to support him. As he had come naked from his mother's womb, so he will return as he came. He will take nothing from the fruit of his labor that he can carry in his hand. This also is a grievous evil. Exactly as a man is born, thus he will die. So what is the advantage to him who toils for the wind?
Hey, Josh, what is the answer to our question? And if we choose physical pursuits, what is the outcome? And just because you read, Josh, doesn't mean you have to answer that. What can we say?
It doesn't amount to anything.
Work and everything that we did that doesn't have a spiritual import is not going to amount to anything. And very few people will remember it in a very short time, or us.
So let's talk about some of the things that we've talked about in previous lessons, and the things that that really matter. Because if you think about the Pharisees, what really mattered to the Pharisees? How they looked, how they were seen by men. So where was their treasure? It was on the earth, and it was the. That's right. All they wanted was to satisfy that selfish desire to get that praise of men. So technically, you could say that their treasure was themselves. It goes back to the fasting that we talked about. What's the fasting about? It's not about being seen of men. It's about denying yourself. So many of the things that we've talked about in the Beatitudes, it all goes back to denying yourself and making sure that the flesh is not what motivates us. I don't know who was first over here.
What we're really saying is that our treasure is a spiritual treasure. Should be giving up on self and turning everything over to God to... Christ said that his meat was to do the will of the Father that sent him. That was his only concern was pleasing God. And to whatever degree we could do that and grow in that, that is how we put our treasure in heaven. It's our whole trust and confidence in everything that we do spiritually is in him and his righteousness and his mercy.
I'm gonna go back in just a second about what you're saying there, because for me that is a huge significant point in what we're fixing to talk about. I'm gonna ask the question in just a minute, so just play like you didn't hear this, about how do we make those heavenly treasures are our priority. How do we make that? We'll talk about it in a minute. Jonathan?
I was under the impression that your loyalty is just a devotion to an object or to God. And you can have true loyalty to whatever you desire to put it to. If your loyalty is going to the ball game on Sunday and not coming to church, and your loyalty is in that. In Matthew 6:24, it says, "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money." So either way, you're going to be serving someone. Either way, you're going to be devoted and loyal to either God or Satan. And so I may have misunderstood, but I thought you or someone may have said loyalty is only true if it's to God, or there's only one loyalty, and either you're not loyal.
My
And maybe I didn't say it the way that my brain was
thinking it. That happens a lot. It's the idea that you're having loyalty to something that is just going to go away. So it's kind of a false loyalty. Why would I want to be loyal to something that's just going to eventually not exist?
The true loyalty to be only being to God. True, you can be loyal to whatever. I'm a big fan of a quality product, whether it's a fish and reel or whatever. But if I get that reel, I'm going to want another one. Or I'm going to want to make it better, or I'm going to want to do something, and it's just going to fall apart on me eventually. And where does this all bring us to? Why am I not happy with physical things? It's because it's a physical answer to a spiritual problem.
And both of y'all's comments transition perfectly into the next section of our lesson. And so, in verses 22 and 23, our eyes must be clear. If our primary focus is God, as you two were saying, and all we do is subject to laying up treasures of faith for heaven, we will be full of light. However, if the material things of this world have allured our sight, the things that may not be evil, that fish and lure or reel or rod or whatever it is that you are really into, may not be necessarily evil in and of itself, but our eyesight is bad. Therefore, the light of the Lord is blocked and the darkness resides in us. So loyalty involves a constant monitoring of our material blessings to make certain they aren't blocking the light of the gospel in us and casting a dark shadow upon our hearts. Verse 22 says, "The lamp of the body is the eye. Therefore, your eye is good. Your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." We're all saying the same thing, and that is, it's difficult to be loyal to something that really, from a Christian's perspective, it's difficult to be loyal to something because it's taking away our loyalty to God, isn't it?
Buy that pickup that I want, and
I can do all these things, and I can still be loyal to God, and I can be a good Christian. I just think I'm going to split my time up between me. And the reality is that possible? No. Because number four says, verse 24, what's the basic point of verse 24? It's not possible. It's not possible for us to split our loyalty 50-50, however we want to do it. Why do we do that? Why do we do that? Because I'm just as guilty as anybody. Why do I put my loyalty in things of this world sometimes, even though I know I shouldn't? But some of those things become really important to me. Why do we do that?
It's desirable.
Is it desirable? Somebody says something over here. Weakness of the flesh. That's what it really comes down to. Is that's what I want.
Because your eye is focused on those things and not on things above.
Thank you. So my eye, which is the lamp of my body, is focusing on all these things in the world. And it, essentially it's blocking my ability to receive God's light. It is not allowing me to have the things inside of me to keep me loyal to God. What do we do to keep ourselves loyal to God?
The lamp of the eye, the body of the eye, the Beatitudes there, those that mourn. The person there that is mourning, he is actually seeing, spiritually, he is seeing what is going on around him. He is seeing the faults in his own life, the disappointments that he is, the way he has disappointed God. And to me, that's what it's speaking of, the mourning. So if your eye is single and you're spiritually, you're looking at the world as it really is, and morally, and the things that are in people's lives around you, and that has been in your own life, you're turning yourself completely to God. This question here, if the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? How well do you see your own faults? How well are you looking at the realities around you? And how great is the darkness that is in your life? So those are things that we all have to we have to work at that.
Right.
It's not something that comes...
Our spiritual perspective is what determines that, isn't it?
Yes.
The things that we are around, the things that we're surrounding ourselves with, those are the things that determine our spiritual perspective. Those are the things that will eventually consume us and eventually determine our loyalty. Brother Brown?
In 1 John, 2nd chapter, he tells us that do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away in the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. So if we can do the things that we enjoy without having the lust of the eyes or the pride of life or the lust of the flesh or the lust of the eyes or the pride of life, then we can still serve God in doing those things.
Right.
But we have to keep God at the forefront.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of what is referencing here in 2 Timothy, the next question down here. reference the words of Paul to Timothy in 2 Timothy 2, 3, and 4. What choices and staples of faith in your life prove to yourself and God that He is your master and not man? Verse 2 Timothy 2, verse 3 says, "You therefore must endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No one engaged in warfare entangles himself with the affairs of this life that he may please him who enlisted him as a soldier." It really comes down to our priorities. It really comes down to the choices that we make. If we're going to allow that thing that may not be sinful, but if we're going to make the choice to allow it to consume our life. And Chris said something that I just kind of stuck with me. A lesson that he did a couple months ago about inheritance. He said, "How will you know what your treasure is if you never have to choose?" Think about that for a minute. How will you know what your treasure is if you never have to choose? It's interesting to think about, isn't it? There's a lot of people nowadays that don't treasure anything. Nothing really matters to them. But there's a lot of people who treasure the wrong thing. And they're making the choice to choose the wrong thing, knowing good and well what the true treasure is. The last section here says, "Our hearts house treasured things we accumulate in life. But there is not room for God and mammon, for there is too much conflict between them. We must choose." It's up to us, isn't it, to choose where our treasure is. We have to be able to make that decision. How do we do that? What determines, going back to what our first comment that was made, what do we use to determine our value?
Our attitude.
God determines our value. He says, "Here's what's valuable." And by that, we say, "Okay, I'm going to wrap my attitude around exactly what you said." And that's going to determine what the choices that we make. Appreciate all of your comments. It's a good class. Chris will finish up the second section here about the test of worry. So make sure you prepare for that section, and we'll have a good discussion. Thank you.